You are Locked On Pacers, your daily Indiana Pacers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome in to the Locked On Pacers podcast. My name is Adam Friedman. As always, I'm a staff writer at IndyCornrows.com, of course, one of the co-hosts of the Locked On Pacers podcast. Can someone explain to me why Domantas Sabonis' original deal came back in that game at the end of the game? So Vic came into the game with give or take 3 minutes left, Sabonis around the same time. Can someone explain to me why those guys came back in the game? Pacers are up 18, 17 if you want to count the next free throw Josh Jackson would make. I can't explain it. I wrote down three reasons basically why I think they maybe brought them back in. First one I wrote was maybe keep the rhythm of Victor Oladipo. Like maybe, you know, you want to keep playing in the fourth quarter so he's used to it. That doesn't really pass the smell test in my opinion. The second was to get his scoring average up, which maybe, but I don't see Vic or McMillan being worried about his stats. They really haven't been since his injury. They don't seem like a team just like going out for the stats at times. And the third one I really thought was probably the reason was they were only up 18, like it would have won maybe by only 9 or 10, but I really just don't understand the coaching decision-making made by McMillan. I just don't understand it. With 3 minutes left in the game, you bring back your already been injured star shooting guard who could use playing as a few minutes possible, especially in a game where you're up by so much. I mean, he ended up finishing with 33 minutes. He could have finished with under 30 or around 30, which is significantly better. I get it. Sabonis had only played like 21 at the time, so fine. Maybe bring him back, but I just don't understand the logic by bringing back really any of the starters. He brought Bojan back in the game too. I don't understand bringing back any player that had played over 30 minutes. Like, give these guys the minutes off because you're going to need them later in the season. Those minutes are going to add up over time. They've been adding up over the season. They've been playing so many. You know, I've talked about it, how this team plays so fast that every minute is even a little harder on these players. And now you're bringing guys back in when you're up 18 points in a game you're clearly going to win instead of playing bench guys who, like Poitras or Ben Moore or TJ Leaf, left with an injury, so couldn't play Leaf. But guys you know who aren't as valuable, who you could just steal minutes with, but you aren't going to play them. I mean, for God's sakes, play Joe Young 40 minutes. Play Joe Young 40 minutes. I mean, why does it matter? Young is an out-of-rotation point guard as soon as Collison comes back. I mean, yeah, he's getting limited minutes here, but 40 minutes for him is not a big deal. I'm kind of dumbfounded by this because they were up by 18 points. They weren't going to lose this game. They weren't. Yet McMillan decided to bring his guys back in. Why? Why? I can't explain it, but got to move on from it. Pacers won 116 to 101. They dominated from the start. They basically led by 14 at the end of the first. They had a big, I think, a 23-point lead at one point. I think got not 20, 23 in the first half, and then I think they had as big as a 30-point lead, if not more. In relation, I believe they were up like 80 to 50 something, score like that. They were up actually 99-30-65, looked like the peak, so that's 34 points. So yeah, the game got close towards the end, but they were up 34 points going into the fourth quarter, so that's a pretty big deal. The best game was obviously from Thaddeus Young, who really stepped up. He shot 10 of 13, which is awesome for a guy like him. He had 22 points. He also had the best plus-minus at a plus 33. Some other big scores were Sabonis 19, Bojan 17, and Vic 21. Vic should have had 17 if he come back in the game. Vic was a plus 35 on the court. He was all over the place. He had 9 assists, too. It was just one of those games where it was, again, a really evenly distributed game. Have you noticed? I've noticed this a little bit, that basically any game where the scoring is evenly distributed, I mean, like, there's no Vic scores 35-point game or some guy scores 30, they tend to blow those games out. Every time, you know, Vic has to go for 30 or Collison went for 30 once or some guy has to, or you need, like, you know, a ton of points. Basically, it's basically been Vic and Collison a little bit, have scored more than 30 for this team. They seem to lose or at least have it's a closer game. But every time every guy scores under, let's say, 23, but every guy on the team scores between 17 and 23, they tend to win and blow teams out. And I'm not just not just win, but they just dominate games, which it just shows that how much his offense is about rhythm, flow, and getting guys open. So that's pretty good, I think. It really shows the Pacers aren't stat hungry. They aren't, I mean, they are reliable in Depot in some sense, but they aren't, you know, trying to force players just scored, you know, fortunately, they like to, it's, you know, they're playing at their best when everybody is getting open shots, where they're not worrying about who has this many points, who gets this shot. You know, they aren't stat-driven kind of guys, which is really good for this team. Another thing I noticed was they held Devin Booker again to a really, really crappy night. So last time the Pacers played was 10 days ago. They played the Suns. Booker shot 5 of 16. Well, guess what? He shot 5 of 16 again. This time he didn't make a single three. He held the 19 points. So between the Pacers game, both Pacers games, Phoenix played three times. Played Portland, Booker had 43. Denver, Booker had 30. Milwaukee, he only had 14. But think about that. They held him, you know, in two of his last five games, he's had his worst games of the season, maybe. His worst game was probably against the Pacers. I mean, against the Bucks, he shot 2 of 14, so that's pretty awful. So there's that. But it's just kind of interesting to see the Pacers have really done a good job of stopping Devin Booker. I think it has to do with Depot's defense a little bit. He seems to, I mean, the Pacers just own the Suns. I don't know how to put it. The Suns are not a good team. Pacers own them. It seems really easy for them to kind of get it. And then, you know, I want to give one last thing, a shout-out to just Al Jefferson. I wrote an article about him that came out this afternoon. Check that out on IndyCornrows.com. But Jefferson had 10 points with a plus 7 on the court. I know he fouled out, so that was kind of a negative. But this might be the last time you really see him in the rotation. Turner was questionable for today's game. I imagine he might play Friday against the Cavs. We'll find out, I'm sure. We'll find out soon. But this could be the last time you see Jefferson in the rotation. And he's been very solid. He's just been chugging along. Solid player. 4 of 8 in the field in the game. Played 21 minutes, so it's good to see. I think there were some doubts about Jefferson. Could he really be efficient coming off the bench? You know, after last season where he sort of faded, he had a really good start and then faded very quickly because he just, his style of play isn't really in the NBA anymore. He's too slow. He's older. It's just a combination of things have sort of kind of pushed him out of this league and will probably push him out of this season where he won't be on a roster next year, I would guess, unless it's at some like minimum capacity. But I think he's been effective with the Pacers, and he might have actually earned himself a chance to play for some team next year just because he can do a few little things that you can set teams up. You know, you can build a bench unit where you can set him up, you know, for two or three shots in the post, you know, get him, you know, he fights for rebounds. He is a bigger guy, so he's able to box the guys, and he just has some moves that a lot of the young centers of the league aren't prepared to defend. So just really depends how much you limit his liability on defense is honestly how he has to be on the court. But he's a plus 7, I think, you know, compared to some of the bench guys who, you know, Stevenson was a minus 13, Poitras was a minus 15, Gwen Moore was a minus 14. Granted, those guys were probably the three guys in right when the Suns made that run beginning of the fourth quarter. So there's that. But I think Jefferson's been effective over the past, now it's 8 games he's played in the rotation. I think he deserved at least some praise, just considering I think he had a very low bar coming in, and he's definitely hit that bar, if not exceeded it, through the past 8 games. But it is time for Turner to come back, so I'm excited for that. And I'm excited when Turner comes back because I think hopefully he can just kind of continue to grow because he had kind of settled in sort of to the offense, at least in recent weeks. He hasn't been, you know, he looked better than I thought he had looked earlier in the season. I think he had sort of kind of found his spot with this team, was playing pretty well. He was kind of becoming he's the go-to guy on defense where he is the best defensive player on this team. So they kind of were setting him up to succeed on the defensive end, I guess, at times, the way they were defending guys. And I think he was sort of settling in to where to get his shots from. You know, he had 2 really good games before he got hurt where he had 15 and 13 points. But, I mean, just looking back before then, he had 3 or 4 20-point games. I mean, he wasn't putting up a ton of duds. He did when Vic was out, but that kind of threw everybody off. But he was sort of, I think, really finding his place with the team and actually playing pretty well. You know, he was definitely a huge positive in defensive end, and they'll need that. They'll need that back, especially when they go against the Cavs. I know they have some easy games against the Hornets coming up, but they're definitely going to need more of him in the future, obviously, because you just can't replace his defense. He's, like I said, the best defender on the Pacers. I'm going to take a quick break, and then on the other side of the break, I'm going to be talking about Domantas Sabonis and Thad Young. Welcome back in. This is going to be a quick segment, maybe 5 minutes tops. We'll see how long I can ramble for, but probably 5 minutes tops. I wanted to talk about just the way Sabonis has played. Now he's been reinserted in the starting lineup again. You know, I think he's now probably at 15 starts in the season. He started 7 games earlier when Turner was hurt. Again, he starts when Turner's hurt again. And he's looked really good, and I think he is continually to show why he deserves to be playing big minutes. Now, you know, is 24 minutes, that's what he was basically playing when he's coming off the bench, are those big minutes? I guess you could say 24, 25, but I'm thinking like in the starting rotation with the starters being given more opportunities to succeed than he is off the bench because he has to play with Lance a little bit, who kind of, they're figuring it out, but Lance steals some of his rebounds. His stats are depressed when he plays with Lance. It's obvious. You know, you see his rebounding stats always go down when he's on the court with Lance because Lance is the biggest rebound stealer on the team. But what I mean just, should he start in place at Thad Young? Let's just say it. I just wanted to say it. I don't know right now if he should. I think Thad Young still provides some veteran experience and value. But, you know, let's look past the next 40 games, next 30 games, whatever we have left, into next season. So my guess is Thad Young picks up his option. It's at $12 million. I think the only way he doesn't pick it up is if the Pacers restructure his deal. Maybe they somehow say, instead of paying you $12 next year, how about we pay you $25 over three, something like that. That could maybe work. It depends. I mean, I think the Spurs kind of did it with Pau Gasol. They restructured to give him, you know, spread out as basically his money because, you know, I think on the open market, maybe Thad can get, like, I think a 3 or 25 deal, his open market value, which he might have in years. Maybe he wants 4 years from the Pacers. I don't know. He is 29, so he'll be 30 in June. So, you know, the end of next year, on the other side of 30, 31, theoretically, he has free agency in the 2019 offseason. So I don't know if he's getting more than a 3 or 4 year, maybe a 2 or 3 year deal at that point. But that could be an option for the Pacers. But if he does pick up his option, he then becomes sort of this weird spot where he is sort of, if he's not willing to accept a bench role, blocking Sabonis from growing. Because I think we all can agree, Pacer fans alike can all agree, Sabonis, Turner, Depot, that's your core three. Those are your three starters, and then you slot everybody else around and figure it out. You know, you figure out the small forward, maybe you move Depot to point guard and you find another shooting guard, things like that. But you those are your three guys, and you slot everything else around. Those are your three guys. You can lock them up long term for 4 or 5 more seasons, probably at least. Those are your guys. So now if Thad Young is willing to accept a bench role, then he kind of becomes an overpaid backup power forward. You know, that's why I was saying if you could restructure his contract, it'd be really good because then you could get him at the right price for a backup power forward, I think. Because I think he still has value. You know, he is still a really quality player. He brings experience off the bench. If he came off the bench, he brings leadership. That's why he's the captain of the team. And he brings some consistency that you don't always see with guys at the bench that, you know, veterans bring, where he can come in and he will shoot 5 of 7 if he plays a limited role. He will get his rebounds. He will probably play good defense. You know, at times he's frustrating, but he will probably play good defense if he comes off the bench. So maybe in his older years, he's willing to accept that role. That's a possibility. If he tells the patient, listen, I'm willing to accept playing 20 minutes a night, coming off the bench, playing limited role. You know, you when you need me, use me, but I'm willing to kind of take a step back and let Domas kind of grow into the starting power forward role, then they should re-sign him. They should pick up his option, give him an extension, and make him kind of, you know, one of those lifetime, you know, let him end his career with Indiana, basically, or come close to it. But I think ultimately, like most NBA players, and I think most human beings, I wouldn't knock Thaddeus at all. He's going to want the money, and I think he's going to pick up his option. He's going to stay one more year, and then he's going to go out and get a 3 or 4 year deal for more than the Pacers are willing to pay and start for some team. You know, unless, you know, Young thinks that if I stay here for 4 more years, I can win a championship, which he might. You know, there is a solid case that the Pacers are one of the younger teams in the league with a nice core. Once they find another guys to slot around, you know, maybe Robinson turns into something if he comes back healthy. They find a point guard. They can sort of build this really good team that can compete because, you know, we aren't too far away from the post-Cavs. Post-LeBron Eastern Conference. Then you're looking at the Celtics as the best team, maybe. The Raptors are going to hang around. But in 3 years from now, the Pacers could be the best team in the East, at least. You know, they're still going to be the Warriors, but the Pacers could be the best team in 3 seasons if Turner develops what we think he will turn into. Sabonis develops, Vic continues to play at his level, and they find another guy to go along with them. They could be, so maybe Young sees that. But I think something to talk about is just to look towards is how does, you know, I think Nate is grooming Sabonis to take over Young's role, so I wonder how that plays out towards the end of the season, especially after the trade deadline, when I think we'll see some more lineup switches, changes, things like that, just because there's no longer that urgency to trade guys and try to boost value for guys because they're, you know, I think Collison will continue to start probably, but I think he's another guy who's sort of in the lineup, maybe not because they're trying to trade him, they're trying to keep his value up, things like that. So something to look forward to. something to look towards. It's just, I wonder how the Pacers manage Sabonis. And if they try to get Sabonis and Turner on the court more towards the end of the year to let them develop together, because that is the future of the Pacers, obviously. Those two guys playing, some one playing power forward, one playing center. I don't know how you do it, but one of them does it. That's the future of the Pacers. That's all I got. I told you I'd go. I went 6 minutes on that segment, so it is what it is. I think it's a good one, though. Just look towards the future of that, of the Sabonis young kind of dynamic going forward, especially when Turner returns. As always, you can follow the Locked On Pacers podcast on Twitter at Locked On Pacers. You can follow me at FriedmanAdam5. You can follow my co-host, Tony East, at TEastNBA. He's been going to practices. I think he's going to get credentialed soon, so that's pretty cool. But we should have more stuff for you coming up. Listeners, on a Thursday, you'll have more information on. There'll be a Cavs preview on Friday, and we'll be back together on Monday for our weekly show. That's it for today's Locked On Pacers podcast. Have a great rest of your day.